Here we go.
Everybody is just on the beat screaming, kill, kill, kill. This is hockey.
Oh, my Lord. Wow.
This is the Puck Podcast.
I was very entertained and excited. I couldn't believe how good it was.
Shut your yap.
This is the Puck Podcast.
There's a point where it just becomes absurd.
That was gutless.
This is the Puck Podcast.
Hi, I'm Wayne Gretzky, and you're listening to the real great one.
This is the Puck Podcast with Eddie Garcia and Doug Stolhan.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
From Los Angeles, I'm Eddie Garcia, along with Doug Stolhan. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast. It is Tuesday, June 30th, 2023. On this week's show, in the first period, we'll recap the conclusion of the conference finals and preview the Stanley Cup Final. Second period, we'll discuss the news from the past week of the NHL. We have news on two new head coaches, one being hired and one of them filling a job we didn't know was going to be available. Plus, we have a special interview with Florida Panthers radio play-by-play man, a favorite of Doug Stolhan. It is Doug Plagans. And in the third period, we'll read your emails, all that and more on this edition of the Puck Podcast. But before we get into all that, time for a quick off-ice report. Or maybe a not-so-quick off-ice report because we have a little extra time. I bring in my co-host, Doug Stolhan. Hello, Doug. How are you?
I'm dandy, Eddie Garcia. How are you?
Okay. You know, I'm in a little bit grumpy mood because I was recording the Locked on LA Kings podcast before we came on the air here, and it didn't go well. There's some glitches, and I'm going to have to go back and redo it after we do this show. But it happens. I mean, what are you going to do?
I'm glad you're able to redo it and it wasn't live, but I'm just curious, when you say glitches, how did you not realize you weren't wearing pants?
No, that's not a glitch. That's just par for the course. I mean, I'm not wearing pants right now. So, I mean, you know. I do have a story to share. I think you'll find amusing, but anything that you would like to share before we, as we, you know, get the off-ice report going here?
Yes. You familiar with the website, the app, the advertised service, Angie's List?
I am, yes. I've heard of it.
So for those that aren't familiar with it, maybe around the world, what it claims to do is you go on there and say, here's the project I need done. And they get a bunch of local professionals that they have vetted that are able to do that job, and they contact you and say, it's a bidding, you know, I can do that for this much. They also have a service where they will, they're like, look, if you tell us you're willing to hire somebody and are agreed to this price, we will get somebody and they will do it for that price. You don't have to do any bidding. There's none of that. So I said, fine, we have an electrical job we need done. I told them what
you,
I needed.
Don't want to try and fiddle with that yourself?
No. And nor do I feel like having, you know, five people come out here and give me the old rigmarole of, you know, the bid. I just let's get it done. So I said, fine. They said, great. We'll have somebody there Saturday between these hours. I said, fantastic. Saturday comes, that window opens, and at the very end of the window, it was a 3-hour window, I get a text from the professional that was supposed to come out saying he's having car problems. Can you reschedule for tomorrow? I say, sure. What time? He gives me a time. I said, sounds great. See you then. I then get an email from Angie saying, your job is completed. Let us know how it went. So I get on there and I said, no, it's not. He never showed up. Explain to them. Oh, we're very sorry. We'll get in contact with him. Sunday comes and goes. Monday is a holiday here in the United States. Comes and goes. Tuesday morning, I still haven't heard anything from him, from them, nothing. I get in contact with him again. I'm like, look, I don't know if this guy got paid or what, but the job was never done. He never showed up. I'm not hearing from him anymore. I want somebody coming out. They're like, oh, we're very sorry. We'll have somebody out there in a couple days. How about Friday? I said, fine, as long as they show up. Oh, of course. So I'm just like, this is your, you know, maybe not ever hire that guy again. Like, I would remove that guy from our contact list if I was them personally. But I just, it's just frustrating. Like, I could have gone into the old, ye old yellow pages, looked up an electrician, just called Burt's Electronics or Electrical, and they would have had it done by now. But instead, I'm still waiting over a week later for somebody to come out if they show up on Friday. And I'm like, what do I do if they don't show up on Friday? At that point, I'm just going to say, close the account, good day, and I'll go to the yellow pages and hire Burt's Electrical or something like that. But just frustrating that you want to hire somebody. It's a simple job. We're not asking for anything crazy here. And still can't get somebody out.
So we've known each other a long time. But sometimes, you know, maybe you forget. Or I know you had said something on your birthday about liking lemon, right? You were going to get some lemon cupcakes.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, I don't recall Doug liking lemon. Or that didn't resonate with me. Maybe I had forgotten, or maybe there was just something about you that had slipped through the cracks in all of our years of living together and being friends and all that kind of stuff. So I'm guessing you know this about me, but I'm not 100% sure. And there may be a story, but I can't recall if it was you with me or somebody else. So what do you know about me and motion sickness?
You are susceptible to it. You do not like roller coasters that are going to invert you, get you upside down or spin you around, certainly. And you are... I think car sickness is also a bit of an issue, if I recall, from road trips with you.
Well, you are correct. Is there a specific story you recall about me and motion sickness at all?
Two of them.
Okay.
One, the car sickness.
All right.
It was a trip that I drove us up to Oakhurst to do a Yosemite High School football game.
Okay.
And you were not feeling well, and we got to the beautiful town of Oakhurst and our favorite restaurant at the time. Mm. The Foster's Freeze, because they gave us free food.
Yes.
And we always got free hamburgers, free French fries, free ice cream sundaes. We loved it. And you were not feeling well enough to indulge that particular week. And I, being a good friend, stuffed my face right in front of you.
Well, if it makes...
So that's one.
Yeah, I would have done the same, so don't feel bad about it.
Yeah. Two was you went with Jackie and me to Six Flags, I think.
That, then, yes, it was you. That okay.
And
yes.
You went on a roller coaster and you immediately did not feel well and had to sit down for a while.
Yes. Okay. So, yes, you have a good memory of that. And it is an issue with me for many years. It seems like it's gotten worse over the years. Or maybe I've just been smarter about not putting myself in that position, so I'm not feeling the effects of that. But I 99.9% of the time, I drive with my wife, Karen. The only time is if I'm really tired, I'll hand it over to her. I'm bad with motion sickness. So anyway, I don't know how I saw this. Maybe it was just some ad that I happened to randomly see online, but there's something called a relief band. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
Okay. Apparently it claims that it can be very effective in relieving the symptoms of motion sickness. And it's a thing. It looks like a watch. It's got a metal part on the back of it. You take this, I don't know, what's the word? This goo, you put it on your wrist. It's like a conductor, like for an electrical current. Then you strap that thing on your wrist and you turn it on to whatever level you need, and it's supposed to help you out. So we go to Disneyland every Friday, and there are certain rides we don't go on. And unfortunately, my wife really loves those rides. So I thought, you know, hey, maybe I can try this. Maybe I can go on those rides and this can help us get more of our money's worth at Disneyland. So we buy this thing. I think it was around $200. We looked at all the, we looked at all the reviews. Everything, it looked like it got pretty good reviews. At least it gave you some sort of relief, maybe for free people more than others. So anyway, so we get this thing in the mail. We look at it. All right, here we go. We turn it on, turn it back off again. Make sure it's working, and then off we go 2 days later to Disneyland. And my wife loves the Guardians of the Galaxy ride, all right? It used to be called something else, but basically you're...
That's the Hollywood Tower of Terror.
Correct, correct. That was, and that's what it was when I went on it, the only time I'd gone on before. Basically, you're in like an elevator-type thing. You're strapped in. You shoot up, and then they drop you down, and then free fall, and then back up again, and down again, and does that like four or five times. And she loves that thing, and I, you know, before this, I was like, there's no way in hell I'm going on that thing. I did it once, many years ago, and said no more. So we get this thing. We get to the park. We take it out. She squirts the goo on my wrist. We put it on. Go to turn it on. The thing will not turn on. So we determined that somehow we didn't actually shut it off, and the batteries have died. So they sell watches at Disneyland, I think. Maybe they got some watch batteries here. It's like a watch battery, right? So we go to a bunch of different stores. We ask a bunch of different people. No battery. So my wife had her heart set on going on this ride. So I said, you know what? I'll give it a try. We'll see how it goes. I want to be a good husband. I want to make you happy. Let's try it. We go on that effing ride. And first of all, I love the, you know, I'm a big Marvel guy, and they had all kinds of cool stuff as we were going on the ride. You know, you're like in, what's his name? The guy that Benicio del Toro played, the Collector. It's supposedly like his place, and he's got all these different things he's collected. And there were a lot of cool things to look at, and so I'm enjoying this. Well, this is great, great, great. So we get on, and it starts to do its thing, and I am in agony. I've got my eyes shut for after the first drop. I'm like, just close your eyes. Maybe that'll help. I'm flying out of that seat. My ass is off the seat every time we drop down. I am literally praying for this ride to end. Please make this end. I hate this. This is awful. I hate this. So it goes, you know, four or five times, drops you down. We get off, and Karen says, "How you doing?" And I just shook my head. And we walk off, and she's like, "Oh no." And fortunately, it was a overcast day. There was a crisp, cool breeze that met me as I exited the ride, and it helped me to feel a little bit better. We went and sat down for a while, and I was just like, F that ride. I am never going on that ride again. I don't know how in God's name you can enjoy that ride. F that ride. So now we're trying to figure out, how do we test this thing if it's going to work or not? If I don't go on that ride again, I'm not planning on going on that ride again unless I can test this thing out on another ride to see if it gives me some help or not. So that's what's hopefully going to happen. We went and bought new batteries for it. We took the batteries out of it so it doesn't have the same issue. We're not going to put the batteries back in it until we get to the park. So I'm trying to figure out, maybe, do I...
What other rides set you off?
Well,
Soarin' Over California?
No, Soarin' I'm fine on. And I actually am okay going on, the Wildest Ride in the Wilderness. What is it called?
Thunder Mountain.
Big Thunder Mountain. I'm actually okay with that. So there is a certain level I can do, but clearly that
one. What about California Screamin'?
Yeah, we're thinking about maybe, but it seems like it's the drops that really gets me. It's not the speed of something, and even twists and turns aren't too bad, but it's that drop that really does a number on me. So we'll see.
Why can't, just real quick, why can't Karen just go on the ride by herself?
She can,
the solo rider?
But she doesn't want to because she wants to enjoy it with the love of her life.
Well, but the love of her life is going to...
I know. That's why we've tried to find a solution to this.
Have you ever tried just regular motion sickness pills?
Yeah, they're okay. Maybe we do a combo of that and this thing. Maybe that can be the... it's going to take some real trial and error testing.
I mean, look...
To go back on that Guardians ride again. I don't know. That's
I'm
PTSD.
Telling you right now, 5 stars or not, there's no way that thing's going to do enough to get you to enjoy that ride, to not feel sick. If you were sick on the first drop and praying for it to end and white-knuckling it, there's no way you're just suddenly going to be like, "Woo, this is great. I'm enjoying. Let's go again. Let's get back in the line." There's no way. I mean.
Well, we'll see. Oh, man, I had like the sweats going.
We'll see.
And,
No, I've been there. Look, to give you a similar, I've never had a problem with motion sickness. It's gotten worse as I've gotten older. I should say it's presented itself as I've gotten older. So I may have told this story on the show many years ago. When I was living in Westchester, at the end of my street was a Catholic school, and every year they had a carnival.
Yeah.
And
those rides.
Yeah, so I'd walk Biscuit at the time, and we'd go by there, and I saw him setting up the carnival. I'm like, "Ooh, hot damn. Carnival's coming to town." And I'd watch him set it up, and I'm like, they put up the banner. It's coming this day. Great. band, the carnival's arrived. I tell Jackie, I'm going down there. You want to go with me? I'm going to go down to the carnival. Yep, let's go. We go down there. We get to the entrance. I said, we'll take, you know, $30 worth of tickets, please, for rides. Here you go, buddy. First ride we went on was one that had, like, let's say five arms spinning out from it. And each arm had four cars at the end of it that would spin.
Yeah.
So the whole machine spins and each four car ride spins.
Yeah.
And I've been on the teacups. I've been on all kinds of spinning rides. Never had a problem with it. I get on that thing. Jackie gets on with me. Guy fires it up. The old toothless carny fires it up. Off we go. I'm immediately like, oh, this isn't good. Not feeling good. As it goes, it's getting worse and worse. To the point where I'm like you. I just have my eyes closed and I'm just like, just it's going to end soon enough. It's going to end soon enough. Jackie's having the time of her life sitting next to me. We get done. She can tell I'm green. I'm not feeling good. I do the old wobbly leg walk off that thing. We're not far from the house. I said, I went behind something in case I needed to throw up. I didn't. But I remember I came out of there and we found a family that was just coming in. We gave them our tickets, said, have a great time. And we went home and that was that. And, I've always been kind of susceptible to them or a little bit more aware now, but I've gone on spinning rides since then and haven't had that problem. So there's one at Magic Mountain. In fact, I think it's now Wonder Woman's Lasso of Truth or something like that. It's been many names, but it's one where you just stand along the wall
and the floor
and eventually
drops
it
out.
Spins. Yeah, it spins and tilts up and the floor drops out. And
I'm getting a little queasy just talking about this.
Yeah, I've been on that since then, and it didn't bother me. So maybe it was just something that night or something, you know. But I've been a little bit more aware of it. But, yeah, I definitely remember going on some ride with you at Six Flags, whether it was Ninja or something. I don't think it was Superman where it's a free fall ride. But anyway, I would be really surprised if this band allows you to go on that ride without incident. Very surprised. It would be as close to a miracle as we have in the modern world as far as curing your motion sickness. And I'm curious what our doctors that listen have to say about what this thing does and what they may recommend as far as you. I don't know. I would tell you just not go on it anymore, and I get that she wants to go on there, but just I'll sit right here and wait for you. Go have a great time.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see if we have an update on next week's show. We'll see if we.
But $200. What if it doesn't work? Are you going to be able to return this?
I don't know that it has a. I don't think it has a great return policy, from what I understand. But anyway, we'll see. I mean, look, it's we thought it was worth the investment. We'll see. Oh, it's the jury is still out.
Before we move on, yes. Do you have the picture that they take of you all on the ride?
No.
Did you look at the picture?
It would.
Because I'm just imagining everybody's face with glee and wonder, and then Eddie white knuckling it, eyes closed.
I'm sure I had a blank look and eyes closed. So I don't think it was much reaction from me other than just praying that it ended soon. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know the last time I really had the thought of something was going on and I was like, please make this end soon. This is awful. I hate this.
Oh, I can remember exactly when I last had that feeling. The duck season.
there's some fans of a certain NHL team that may feel that way as the way their team performed in an elimination game. But we'll transition to that right now as we recap the final few games of the conference finals. We'll start in the East, where the Florida Panthers were in command, holding a 3-0 series advantage in their series against the Carolina Hurricanes. When we last left you, they won game one, 3-2 in four overtimes. The second game, 2-1 overtime win for Florida, and game three was a 1-0 victory. Now, we had said all these games were very competitive, obviously all just one-goal games, that maybe there was a glimmer of hope for the Carolina Hurricanes, because they had been competitive in every game in the series. So game four, obviously a must win for the Carolina Hurricanes, playing in Sunrise, Florida against the Panthers. And it would once again be a one goal game, but once again, it would go to the Florida Panthers. 1-0. They beat the Carolina Hurricanes. Sergei Bobrovsky, 32 saves for his first career postseason shutout. Sam Reinhart scored the only goal of the game in the second period on the power play, his 7th goal this postseason. For the Hurricanes, they have now lost 12 straight conference finals games. They were swept in 2009. They were swept in 2019. They were swept in 2023. Although, according to head coach Rod Brind'Amour, they didn't actually get swept this time. If you heard his post-game press conference...
Let me guess. Because they basically played 6 games because of the multiple overtimes.
I mean, he didn't get specifically into it like that, but he just said, we didn't get swept. Basically saying, and I get what he was trying to say, that usually a sweep means it's not competitive, that one team has been dominant over the other, and you could argue that wasn't the case in this one. Like we said, every game was a one-goal game. But they still got swept. It went 4 games, yeah. And you didn't win one of them. So, no, I love you, Rod Brind'Amour. I think you're awesome, but you got swept. You're gone. You got swept.
Yeah, Rod, just so we're clear, the people that bought tickets to Game 5, are they going to get to use those tickets? Are you still practicing tomorrow? No. You played 4 games. You lost all 4. The Panthers have a big piece of hardware in their locker room and are celebrating as conference champions. And you are doing exit interviews. You got swept. It was very close, very competitive. It could have gone either way in 3 of the 4 games. And really all 4 games could have gone the other way with just one goal or one save here or there. But they didn't go your way. And that's that. Trying to put that positive spin on it ain't going to fly. You could say it doesn't feel like we got swept.
Right.
And that's fine. But to say we didn't get swept is obviously inaccurate. And I think, you know, like I said, it's just this is not by any stretch a dominant performance by the Panthers. It was in the wins and losses. And it was when every time in this series they needed to make a stop, they did. Every time they needed to come up with a big goal, they did. So you can say that for the Panthers, and the Hurricanes came up on the short end of that every single time. And that's very depressing. But I don't think this is what's wrong with the Carolina Hurricanes? What do we need to do differently next season? I think you reload that weapon and give it another shot next season. They were right there in the conference final. They played very well in the first 2 rounds of the playoffs, easily dispatching their opponents. And I think they have all the pieces in place to be back in the conference final conversation next year in a very competitive Eastern Conference.
And, of course, they did have injury issues as well.
Yeah, but, I mean, everybody is at this point of the game. You know, they're coming up on their 100th game played this season. It'd be incredulous to have no injury issues. So, but, yeah, that's. I think they have the depth at each position on defense, in net, at forward, maybe a few tweaks here and there to give a little bit more offensive depth to replace a guy like Max Pacioretty or Stasny, who may be getting a little long in the tooth or unavailable to play. But beyond that, I think you're in a very good position to take another shot next season.
As for the Florida Panthers, and obviously we're going to talk a lot more about them in the second half of the second period with Doug Plagans, the radio play-by-play man for the Panthers. But what a Cinderella season. I know a lot of comparisons have been made to the 2012 LA Kings, who were also an 8 seed, who just kind of snuck into the playoffs, ended up being kind of road warriors. They had made a coaching change during the season. The Panthers made one at the beginning of the season. But Florida right now is riding an 8-game road winning streak. They beat Boston in 7. Remember, they were down 3-1 in that series before storming back. They beat Toronto in 5. Now Carolina in 4. And it's on to the Stanley Cup final as an 8 seed, as the last team to make it in, as a team that probably shouldn't have got in if the Pittsburgh Penguins take care of their business. But they are running with their opportunity back in the Stanley Cup final for the first time since the 1995-96 season. That was their only other appearance in the Stanley Cup final, just their 3rd season in the NHL at that point. Now, they got swept out of the playoffs, so they're still looking for their first ever Stanley Cup final win as well. But obviously, it's been a tremendous story. How much the Panthers in the Stanley Cup final will kind of resonate, that story with casual hockey fans or casual sports fans, remains to be seen. We'll talk more about that when we get into the matchup of the Stanley Cup final. But, I mean, if you're a Florida Panthers fan, it's as sweet as it can get at this point. You've got Matthew Tkachuk going on the NBA on TNT show and talking to those guys, which is a big deal. Now, granted, TNT has the Stanley Cup final, so they're doing the cross promotion, but that's a big show. That show is one of the more prestigious eyeballs on it show in sports. So to get him on there to talk to him, that kind of thing, it's a big deal for the NHL, and that was good to see.
Yeah, it was good to get his some exposure there. I'm sure for a lot of NBA fans, that's the first time they've ever heard of Matthew Tkachuk or the Florida Panthers. They probably thought Carolina Panthers.
Right.
But and as we talked about, it's very unfortunate for them, the organization, that they are making this historic run to the Stanley Cup final at the exact same time that the NBA team in their city is making a historic run to the NBA final. So they are still the second story being talked about in local media, in the word on the street. If people are buying up merchandise to get on the bandwagon, it's probably the Miami Heat. But there's nothing the Florida Panthers can do about that. If they go out and win a Stanley Cup, that'll get its recognition. And we always talk about during the season, a lot of fans get cheesed off about the media not talking enough about my team. We're doing this, we're doing that. How come the media is not paying us, giving us our due credit, blah, blah, blah. And I always say, you'll have an opportunity to get your coverage in the playoffs. And if you take care of business and make it to the Stanley Cup final, you'll get your business, you'll get your coverage. And the Florida Panthers are getting that now on a national level and certainly on a local level, though they are a little bit overshadowed by the Miami Heat. One thing that I mentioned on Twitter that I'm disappointed in is The Athletic, which once launched this great idea of covering every team, and we're going to have beat writers for every team with no ads, and it's just going to be great. And it was for a while, and then they got bought by the New York Times, and they laid people off, and they added advertisements. And I looked it up. I'm like, because I went to read an article about the Florida Panthers, and they don't have a beat writer. And I said, how many NHL teams do not have a beat writer? Well, they cover 23 of the 32 NHL teams. And if you don't have a beat writer assigned to one of the two finalists, then what are you doing, you know? And they got multiple writers covering teams that did not make the playoffs. Let's put it that way. So it's a shame to see, but the Panthers, the coverage that they've gotten has been fantastic, obviously, because they've been exceeding expectations. A year ago, they came up short. This year, they should not have probably even made it into the playoffs. Their regular season, they needed help to get in. They got it. But once they got in, they've taken care of their business. They knocked out the President's Trophy winner, greatest regular season team we've ever seen, in the first round in 7 games in stunning fashion. Go into the next round against a team that was literally chanting, "We want Florida." Took care of them in 4, was it, or 5?
5.
5 games. That's amazing. And then they come in and sweep the division champion from the Metropolitan, the Carolina Panthers, or the Carolina Hurricanes, in 4. So they've won 8 of their last 9 games. Well, I guess 9 of their last 10 games. So they're on an absolute roll. Their goalie is playing out of his mind. The problem is what I mentioned last week. They're going to have a lot of time in between games because the Stanley Cup final does not start until the end of this week. They finished things up on May 24th. The Stanley Cup final does not start until June 3rd. And I think that's too much time for them to do exactly what they were doing. Enjoy the spoils of victory by making appearances on national TV and being told how great they are. Get a little bit of rest and reflection to get away from it and realize how good they've been playing. And I think it's tough to pick up where you left off 10 days ago, with that momentum and that flow and that cohesiveness that the whole team had. We'll see, though. They're going to have their opportunity. And they did. I was happy to see them embrace the trophy, the Prince of Wales trophy. They did not shy away from it. And they're enjoying the moment, as they should. And it's been a long time since the Florida Panthers have been this good, this relevant, and have this opportunity. And hopefully they're around for a little bit longer than four games this time.
All right, let's move over to the Western Conference, find out who would be facing the Florida Panthers in the Stanley Cup Final. When we last left you, the Vegas Golden Knights were one win away from advancing. They won Game 1 by a score of 4-3 in overtime. They won Game 2, 3-2 in overtime, rolled in Game 3, 4-0. And remember, Jamie Benn suspended for two games after that third game when he had the incident where he cross-checked Mark Stone. So Game 4, a must-win situation for the Dallas Stars on home ice, and they are able to pull out a 3-2 overtime victory thanks to Joe Pavelski's overtime game winner, his ninth this postseason. And with that goal, he overtook Alexander Ovechkin as the active leading playoff goal scorer in the NHL. Jason Robertson came alive with a couple of goals. Jake Ottinger, two goals allowed on 39 shots. For Vegas in the loss, William Karlsson and Jonathan Marchessault each had their eighth of the playoffs. Aiden Hill, three goals allowed on 42 shots. There would be a Game 5 in Las Vegas. Same situation. Stars must win to keep their season alive, and they would get a 4-2 victory, buying Ty Dellandrea's two goals. Unlikely hero for them. Jason Robertson now coming alive, gets another goal, his seventh of the playoffs. Jake Ottinger, two goals allowed on 29 shots in the win. For Vegas, Aiden Hill allowed four goals on 34 shots. So we go to a Game 6 on home ice in Dallas. They win. They force a Game 7 back in Vegas. But unfortunately for the Dallas Stars and their fans, they did not show up in this one. This one was over early. 4-0 in the first period. Vegas jumps out to the lead, and it was all but over at that point. I even switched over to the NBA game, which was a Game 7, and that game sucked too. But William Karlsson had two goals, Aiden Hill, 23 saves and a shutout, 6-0. The Golden Knights take care of business and said, no, we are not going back home for a Game 7. Jake Ottinger, who was hot and cold in this series and in the playoffs, six goals allowed on 29 shots. And Jamie Benn, back in the lineup for a Game 6. Hey, we got Jamie back. He did absolutely nothing. Was a -2 playing 12 and a half minutes in this one. So the Vegas Golden Knights on to the Stanley Cup Final.
Yeah, it was all for naught at the end of the day. And it does say a lot about the Stars, maybe their health or maybe their confidence in some of their veterans that are supposed to be their leaders. You mentioned Jamie Benn in a must-win game played 12 and a half minutes. Tyler Seguin in a must-win game played 12 and a half minutes. That's not a lot. As anybody that knows minutes of forwards, and if you're looking like, well, who was playing a lot of minutes? Joe Pavelski was out there for basically 18. Rupe Hintz, I think basically because it was over. There was no point in busting these guys' asses in the end of the season, but he only played 15 and a half minutes. So it was a very disappointing Game 6 for Dallas and a chance for Vegas to just celebrate the whole night, basically. When you get a 4-0 lead in the first period, 3-0, I should say, at the end of the first period, and then Marchessault adds the fourth midway through the second period. When you're up 4-0 halfway through the game, it's pretty obvious you're going to win that. And you can really relax. And then in the third period, there wasn't even much of a pushback, furious comeback from Dallas. They tried, but there was just nothing there. There was nothing in the tank. So it ultimately, when we left the show last week, we said it was over and they should have shook hands after Game 3. Ultimately, that was the case. It just took two games. And I guess I'm glad for Stars fans that they had Game 4 as a chance to enjoy themselves at a home playoff game in the conference final. They enjoyed Game 5, watching on the road and knowing they were coming back for Game 6. But just what an absolute disappointment to see your team get waxed, boat raced on home ice to end the series and the season. And Jamie Benn's last two games are very forgettable. And I don't know where they go from here. I think, like Carolina, there's not a lot that needs to be done. But it also was not a team that won the division and was one of the better teams all season long. I think Dallas was as good as they were going to be and just ran out of gas at some point. And who would have thought Aiden Hill would be goaltending a team to the Stanley Cup final. Certainly not me. Certainly not Adin Hill, I don't think, at the beginning of the year. But kudos to Vegas for building a team, continuing to tweak and not accepting what they had and not running it back. And they're kind of, when you look at other teams that fall short each year, they can look at them and say, well, they changed their head coach and they got results. They've changed their head coach a couple of times. Gerard Gallant got them to a Stanley Cup final. They fired him, brought in Pete DeBoer. They had wildly successful seasons. They fired him, brought in Bruce Cassidy, and now they're back in the Stanley Cup final. So they're not afraid to change head coaches. They're not afraid to make big moves in free agency and in trades. And they're not afraid to eat money and just eat contracts and pay other teams to take contracts off their hands, like Max Pacioretty, like Marc-Andre Fleury. And so it's all worked out for them. They're in the Stanley Cup final. They're the favorite to win the Stanley Cup, certainly against an 8 seed from the East with home ice advantage. And the one thing we do know is that whoever wins the Stanley Cup, it'll be the first time that franchise has ever won a Stanley Cup. And that's exciting for two franchises that have never enjoyed the success, and one that's been around for a long time, 30 years or so, another that's really going to piss some people off if they win it in their first 6 or 7 years of existence. And how come we can't do that? How come we've been sitting around waiting for a cup for decades and this team does it almost immediately?
Yeah, I think I saw something about Vegas is going for the second time in 6 seasons and Vancouver has been twice in 70 years or something like that. And of course, yeah, they lost both times. So I agree with you. I think it's a great thing that we have two non-traditional hockey markets playing for their first ever Stanley Cups. But how this matchup is going to be received nationally is, you know, remains to be seen. As we said, you know, no real star power. I know Matthew Tkachuk is kind of putting his stamp on this postseason. Maybe, you know, we all thought he was, in his own way, a very good player, a player you'd love to have on your team. But I think he's taken it to another level so far this postseason, maybe putting himself, well, as we said, he's a finalist for the Hart Trophy. So, I mean, that certainly speaks for itself. But I don't know that anyone thought he was amongst the elite of the elite in the NHL, maybe. Thought he was a really, really good player, and the way he played certainly stood out. But he's emerged in this. But it is going to be interesting to see. I mean, it'll be a story because they always like to bring this up when it comes to the NHL and TV ratings and things like that. But it'll be interesting to see. I think you and I are both excited about this as much as we can be when it's not our teams involved. Hope it's a good series. I like the fact that we're going to see a first-time cup winner between these two teams. You and I are certainly rooting for one team over the other. But I like the fact that we're getting two new teams. I don't care that we're not seeing any original six teams or any, you know, established big time media markets in there. I don't really care about that. Hopefully it's a good series, but I will be curious to see not just casual sports fans, but how hardcore hockey fans embrace a matchup of Vegas against Florida.
Well, the national attention of saying, how's this going to play with two non-traditional hockey markets? That to me always comes back to laziness on the part of the national broadcast networks and national media. If you don't want to recognize Matthew Tkachuk as a superstar player, then that's on you. He's done the work. He's put up great seasons. He's an incredible antagonistic player. You know from the rivalry with Drew Doughty that he's a guy you love to hate. And the world of professional wrestling tells me that sports fans love to have somebody that they love to hate, to root against. You'll tune in to root against somebody just as much as you'll tune in to root for somebody. And Matthew Tkachuk is that guy. And if the NHL media and the NHL public relations and marketing cannot capitalize on what he is, that's on them, not him. Jack Eichel is a great redemption story of a guy that was the bridesmaid in the Connor McDavid draft, that never achieved his potential in Buffalo, that was driven out of town and fans celebrated his departure and was kind of forgotten in Vegas after last season because he wasn't an impact player. And now he's guiding his team to the Stanley Cup final. So if you can't make a story or market the second overall pick that is having a dynamic postseason, helping his team get to their second ever Stanley Cup final, pursuing his first ever playoff run, and potentially winning a Stanley Cup, that's on you, not him. And the way Vegas has been built, the way the redemption story for Florida after last year's President's Trophy, and the work that they did in changing their head coach and making huge offseason moves, if that doesn't play nationally, that's on you, not them. So that stuff, and this is also a proof's in the pudding. Put your money where your mouth is to the fans. We're tired of the same old teams on Winter Classics. We're tired of the same old teams on outdoor games. How come it's always the same teams on national TV? Well, here you go. Vegas versus Florida in June for the Stanley Cup Final. Both have earned their right to be there. If you don't tune in, then you can shut the fornication up next time you're complaining about they put Boston and Chicago and Pittsburgh and the Rangers and Toronto and Detroit on TV, because that's who you watch. They know. So let's see the ratings. I hope casual hockey fans will tune in. I hope that they do. I hope that the national media gives some attention to these two great teams and the stories that they've built, because one of them is going to be a very worthy champion with a great story to tell. And hopefully that gets heard. But if not, that's not on them. And there's nothing they need to do differently. They've done the work within their organization and on the ice. It's up to us to pay attention. It's up to the media, who are supposedly storytellers, to find the story, make it interesting, and get that to their audience. And it hurts when you don't even have a beat writer working at your website to cover the team all season long.
Well, as far as the matchup itself, you've got one team, Vegas, that didn't make the playoffs a year ago. The other team was the top team in the regular season. As far as the road to get here, Florida beat Boston in 7, Toronto in 5, and Carolina in 4. Vegas beat Winnipeg in 5, Edmonton in 6, and Dallas in 6. The two teams met twice during the regular season. First time was January the 12th in Vegas. The Golden Knights get a 4-2 win. The last time was March 7th in Sunrise, Florida, and the Panthers won that one by a score of 2-1. Before our next show, they'll have played twice, both in Vegas, Saturday, Game 1, Monday, Game 2. Obviously, Florida, as we've mentioned several times, the 8th seed in the East against the 1 seed in the West, although when you look at the, even though Vegas is a 1 seed, all the teams that Florida has beaten on their way to the Stanley Cup Final all had at least equal or more points in the regular season than Vegas. So it's not like they're taking this huge leap up in competition, despite the fact it's an 8-1. Certainly feels like it's a much more even matchup than that would traditionally be. What are your thoughts on this matchup?
Well, I think the rust is going to hurt the Florida Panthers more than they may want to believe. And I know they've been practicing and they're healing up. Healing up isn't going to do you anything at this point in the season. A week off isn't going to make a big difference in your physical ability to perform in the playoffs this late into the season. Adrenaline is what it is, and they're going to be ready to go. But I just think the timing and the communication and the way that they were playing is going to just, it's going to be tough to recapture that magic, because they were playing perfectly as a team for the last, like I said, last two rounds of the playoffs, pretty much. So I think that's going to be tough to recapture. Bruce Cassidy has found the right formula with this team. They're taking a little bit more of a low-profile approach on the ice. The way that they conducted themselves when they had Ryan Reeves was a lot more brash, a lot more in-your-face, a lot more taunting, and we're going to beat you and we're going to let you hear about it. This time they're just kind of letting their actions speak for itself, and I think Vegas definitely has the advantage. I'm still not a believer that Sergei Bobrovsky can keep a 940 save percentage going for four rounds of the playoffs. At some point he has to come back to earth. At some point the coach has to turn back into a pumpkin. And so I, unfortunately for Florida, I think that'll be this round. Now, I've said that each round so far. I didn't think they'd beat Boston. I didn't think they'd beat Toronto. And I didn't think they'd beat Carolina. So continue to prove me wrong, Florida Panthers. It's right there in front of you. But I think the advantage, depth-wise, is negligible. I think both teams have good depth. There's a little bit more scoring depth behind the Vegas Golden Knights if you're looking at balanced scoring. But I think both teams have all the pieces in place. And I didn't think, as much as I may not believe in Sergei Bobrovsky, I believe in him more than I do Aiden Hill.
Right.
To get the job done. So I think they do have an advantage in net when it's all said and done. But I just think that Vegas is going to be too much. I think the depth that they have at four scoring, which is far greater than what we saw from Toronto, which had no depth in scoring whatsoever, and that was the problem. The big four didn't show up in that series, and Florida was able to win pretty easily. And then in the Carolina series, nobody could score, but it certainly was no depth scoring coming through for the Hurricanes either. I don't think that'll be the case with Vegas. I think their depth scoring, guys like Chandler Stephenson, William Karlsson, I mean, we saw it. Keegan Kolasar was scoring. There's enough there. William Marchessault, they're going to get their goals. And so I think Vegas wins this one. And I think it's going to be pretty easy when it's all said and done. I have a friend who's a Vegas Golden Knights fan, lives out in Vegas, got into it because the Golden Knights came to town, loves hockey now. And we were talking last night, and I told him, I said, are you going to go to any games? And he said, I'm going to try and go to one, see what the marketplace looks like. And I said, if I were you, I'd get tickets to game five. I think it may be a night to remember, wink, wink. And so he said, you know, one game at a time. I said, take it easy. You're playing the eighth seed that shouldn't have even made the playoffs. You know, it's not, this isn't, the toughest task is behind you, to me, for the Vegas Golden Knights. But we'll see. Florida's proven me wrong so far. They got a chance to do so again. And if they come, if Sergei Bobrovsky picks up where he left off and is giving up one, maybe two goals a night, then Florida's got an excellent chance to win their first Stanley Cup.
Yeah, very interesting. If memory serves, as we've done a number of the shows, we've always said we would prefer rest over rust, but seems like you have changed your stance, at least in this particular situation. I agree with you. I definitely would choose Sergei Bobrovsky over Aiden Hill in the goalie matchup. I'm a sap when it comes to this kind of thing, but I do believe in the story of a team of destiny. Certainly seems like that's the Panthers to me at this point. Now, granted, I admit I am not rooting for the Vegas Golden Knights. Maybe that's playing a little bit too much into my decision to want to pick the Florida Panthers to win this. I think their road has definitely been tougher to the Stanley Cup final than Vegas's has. So I think they're more battle tested. So I hope it's a good series when it's all said and done. If Vegas has to win, I hope it's at least in six or seven. But I'm leaning towards Florida in this one, and you're leaning towards Vegas. So
yeah, I got Vegas in five. What do you got?
I'm taking Florida in seven. I love seven.
Oh. Well, I hope you're right.
Yeah.
As somebody that has no love for Vegas, the Golden Knights as an organization, and that's based purely on their division rival. I mean, imagine yourself as anything, you know, if you're a Maple Leafs fan, would you be rooting for the Senators to win the Stanley Cup against anybody in the West? Probably not. So same here. But I just think Vegas is going to be too much over the series, and I think once the momentum, once adversity hits Florida, it'll be the first time they've faced it in these playoffs.
I think being down 3-1 to Boston was some adversity. So
that's very true. I will take that back. And that was remarkable. Since then, they won the last three, then four, so that's seven, then four again, that's 11. They've won 11 of their last 12 games. That's a heater. That's getting it going.
Yeah.
And we'll see. I just think 10 days off and hearing everybody tell you how great you've been for those 10 days, I think that messes with your head a little bit. And Vegas is getting just the right amount of time off. three full days off, basically, to get after it and get back into it. 4 days off, I guess.
All right. Well, the Stanley Cup final is set. I'm guessing no one.
Looking forward to hearing what Doug Plagans has to say about it in the second period.
I'm guessing no one on our bracket challenge had Vegas versus Florida. We'll have to double check that to see if that is the case. If so, good on you. I can't imagine that that's 100%. The case. But I would like to know, though, from our Puck Podcast family, are you interested? Are you excited about this kind of outside-the-box Stanley Cup final? Let us know. Feedback at puckpodcast.com. Top of the second period here on the Puck Podcast. We do have an interview coming up in just a couple of minutes with Florida Panthers play-by-play man Doug Plagans. Please stick around for that. But we do have some NHL news to discuss before we get to our interview this week. And we had two coaching vacancies filled earlier today. Now, one of the jobs we didn't know that it was going to be necessarily open, but one job that we did know was available was the head coaching job of the Washington Capitals. And a new name that most people probably aren't familiar with has been hired to fill that role, and that is Spencer Carberry. He's the new head coach of the Washington Capitals, was an assistant with the Maple Leafs, is, though, someone that the Capitals are well aware of. He coached in the minor league ranks for the Capitals with their ECHL and their AHL affiliate in Hershey. So he has earned his dues, so to speak, at the minor league level. He was the ECHL Coach of the Year in 2014, the AHL Coach of the Year in 2021. Went and got a little bit of NHL experience as an assistant with Toronto and now returns to the Washington Capitals as their next head coach.
Interesting job for the Capitals because, look, if you're Spencer Carberry, you get offered an NHL job. There's only 32. You take it. You've never had that job before. It's a chance to get behind the NHL bench and be the head coach of one of the greatest players of all time, Alexander Ovechkin. Not a bad thing to do. But they're in a weird position because their window is not open as a Stanley Cup contender, in my opinion. I don't think it's going to be opening anytime soon. They're not ready to rebuild either, though. They're not ready to tear it down and start rebuilding. So they're kind of in the same position the Pittsburgh Penguins are in, which is we're not a playoff team this past year. We have a very veteran team with some high-powered stars that are on the wrong side of 30, and certainly at the last few years of their career, and certainly their prime. But we don't have a lot of young players ready to come in and make an impact either. So what's the task for Spencer Carberry from the organization? I'm sure they were very clear on it. I'm sure he was talking about what he thinks he needs to do to get them back in the playoffs, get them back as a competitor for a Eastern Conference title and back in the Stanley Cup. And I'm sure that's all optimistic right now. But it's a tough position to see for your first job because I think they're on their way down. And I think much like Eddie on Guardians of the Galaxy, fans are just going to have to close their eyes, hold on, and pray for the free fall to end. Because I think it's going to be a few years before they really hit rock bottom and are able to blow this thing up. We've talked about it. Enjoy Alexander Ovechkin's run at Wayne Gretzky's all-time goal-scoring record. And beyond that, you have a Stanley Cup in recent memory. The window was not for naught. It didn't come and go without enjoying that moment. You've always got that one to look back on. And but I think it's a tough position for Carberry to come into because I'm not sure what the expectation is from the organization as far as the results next season.
Well, the other coaching vacancy that has been filled wasn't officially opened as of last week, although this is not a complete surprise either. But the Nashville Predators both fired and hired their next head coach. John Hines is out, and former Florida Panthers interim head coach and most recently Devils assistant coach Andrew Brunette is in. This is the first hire, obviously, for the new general manager in Nashville, Barry Trotz. So we knew with Trotz coming in, wasn't going to be outrageous if he wanted to hire his own guy, which we see general managers usually like to do. As for Nashville, they did not make the playoffs this year. Record of 42-32-8. As for John Hines, his overall record as head coach in Nashville, 134-96-18. We are most likely, if you listen to this show, you're familiar with Andrew Brunette because of what happened when he was the head coach of the Florida Panthers on an interim basis back in 2021, took over for Joel Quenneville after he was forced to resign after the Kyle Beach situation. Brunette then guides the Panthers to the President's Trophy, 51 wins, 108 points. They were then swept in the second round by Tampa Bay, but then Brunette not retained in a move that you and I both criticized, but turns out for Florida, it was the right move, bringing in Paul Maurice. And that's also an interesting note. You brought it up with Vegas. We have two head coaches in their first seasons with their new teams, guiding their teams to the Stanley Cup final. But Nashville again, John Hines out and Andrew Brunette is in.
Yeah, recent history would tell you a couple things. One, you don't need an elite, quote unquote, goalie to have playoff success, postseason success. That's usually been the case up until recent years. And second is consistency behind the bench is vastly overrated. We've seen teams, as you mentioned, your Kings, the Blues, various teams in recent years make head coaching changes during the season. Coach didn't even have a training camp with the team, came in and won a Stanley Cup that same season. So changing head coaches, I would think, you know, should be very easy for teams right now to justify making a move behind the bench, because you never know. You get the right fit and things could take off pretty quickly. And the wrong fit is not worth clinging to and hoping things turn around. So it's certainly no Rooney rule in the NHL. The NHL teams do not have to interview a minority candidate, do not have to apparently even have the job posted on ladders.com or anything. They just, hey, we want to make a head coaching change, so we're going to announce a firing and a hiring at the same time. You're out, and this guy's in. And for Andrew Brunette, it's a great opportunity. I think the Predators are a good team. There's something to work with there. An elite goalie that you can certainly will keep you in games most night. An elite defenseman as well. And I think that's a good job for him. I was kind of hoping he'd land with the Ducks, but not the case. And I think that's a solid hire by the Predators. And for Barry Trotz, again, it is continuing the theme, though. Andrew Brunette is a former Predator player. He played under Barry Trotz, so they're familiar with each other. And I don't like that trend of hiring people that used to play for the organization, but I don't think that's why he got the job. As you mentioned, this is a Jack Adams finalist a year ago. He was an assistant coach on a team that was very successful this year. I think Brunette has earned the opportunity to be a head coach again. And I like this. I like this move for them.
Well, the dominoes have started to fall as far as the coaching hirings. We'll see if that continues over the next week or so. There are obviously still some big jobs available. You mentioned your Ducks. The New York Rangers job is available. Although I've read and heard that Peter Laviolette is the leading candidate for that job. The Flames still have a coaching vacancy to fill, as do the Blue Jackets. We don't know about Mike Sullivan in Pittsburgh because they have yet to hire their new GM. News on that in a second. Of course, Sheldon Keefe in Toronto, same thing. And there's the DJ Smith situation in Ottawa, because we've got news on the sale of that team and how that could affect things as well. So the coaching carousel still just kind of starting to spin in the NHL.
I thought the Flames had I'm trying to look it up real quick. They had a candidate in mind as well. Did they not?
I have not heard. Maybe you have.
I'm looking it up right now. The Flames have mutual interest with Gerard Gallant.
Ah, all right.
So, and I think I said that would be a good fit for him when he got fired by the Rangers. But he's got some interest in coaching them, and they have interest in him at least, you know, interviewing and hearing him out. Rangers are bringing in Peter Laviolette for a second interview, so obviously some interest there. And yeah, once those two are filled, then the only two jobs left will be the Ducks and the Blue Jackets, which interestingly were the first two teams to fire their head coach. and have been taking their sweet time making a decision. So obviously, I don't think either team is in too much of a rush to get it done, because neither one of them expect to be competitive next year. So they're looking for, we'll get to it when we get to it. Right now, it's about scouting for the draft and getting our ducks in a row for the roster. The coach will come later. But it's interesting that if a job becomes available, like Mike Sullivan, like Sheldon Keefe, potentially even in, well, I guess in Philadelphia, they already had, you know, they already had Tortorella with Danny Briere, and he talked about how much he loves him and Keith Jones, so doubtful they'd fire him. But they're new to the job as well. They didn't hire him. So we'll see what other moves are made. But those would be two very interesting moves, and I do expect Sheldon Keefe to be fired at some point this offseason. It'd be surprising if Kyle Dubas is gone, but you leave the head coach that he hired behind as the head coach in kind of a lame duck situation with a different GM. I would think the new GM would want to bring in his own head coach to see how things go.
And we still have the two GM openings in Toronto and Pittsburgh. The NHL draft now less than 30 days away. There was a report that Kyle Dubas did in fact meet with the Penguins and met with Sidney Crosby. Apparently, Jason Botterill, the former Sabres GM, is also a candidate in Pittsburgh as well. I haven't heard anything in Toronto, which is shocking. Maybe I just missed it. I don't know if you've heard anybody that they're looking and interested in and speaking with as far as the Maple Leafs go about that job.
Brad, what?
That's right. You're right. As soon as I said it, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Brad Treliving apparently did.
Yeah, and that's a great hire if that's who they go out and get. I think he was... He should never have been let go from Calgary. They misplayed their hand there. And I think he'd be a great move if Toronto said, that's the guy we're going to go out and get. Unless, well, I'm confident he would not bring Daryl Sutter with him. So
yes.
There's no chance that's going to happen. But I think that would be a great move. He did a lot of good work in the front office. And the failures in Calgary were not the result of the front office, in my opinion. And he did his work, and I think would be in a good position to make the right moves that are needed for Toronto. And I also think he has the thick skin and experience to handle that market and the pressure that comes with it and the scrutiny that comes with it.
You mentioned Danny Briere. It looks like, judging by his meeting with the media as far as him now officially being the general manager, looks like the Flyers may finally be moving in a direction that we thought they should be moving in for quite some time, as Briere is basically not coming in and saying that this team's looking to compete next season, that he is open to making any moves and trading any players and listening to any offers when it comes to turning the Philadelphia Flyers around. So, we'll, you know, actions speak louder than words, but it does seem like the message is they're finally ready for the full rebuild in Philadelphia, so we'll see.
I did like the we're not shopping Carter Hart, but we're willing to listen to offers. I mean, if you're truly committed to him as your goalie, then you're not listening to offers. So you may not be picking up the phone to initiate the conversation, but you're answering it and you're having that conversation. So yeah, it's long overdue in Philadelphia, and if he's finally able to get through to ownership or the and Keith Jones knows probably from the media perspective, and he's now the team president, if they're on the same page of what we have is not working and trying to salvage this is a fool's errand, throwing good money after bad, then it's long overdue that they finally turn things around.
The sale of the Ottawa Senators is reportedly closer to being wrapped up than it was a week ago. There are reports that Steve Apostolopoulos, I might be saying that wrong, is offering $1 billion for the team. The other bids are in the $850 million to $950 million range. I'm not sure why you wouldn't accept the highest bid, but maybe there's reasons. I did see the guy based in L.A., Nico Sparks, that group. There was some news that got out this week that they're still soliciting funds to be able to meet the sell price that they have kind of promised at this point, so that's not a great sign for them, but he's been out there trying to combat those rumors as well. Whether that's true or not, who knows, but as I said, it looks like the Ottawa Senators sale should be wrapped up here in the next couple of weeks.
And that guy, the owner that is the leading candidate right now to buy the team, has come a long way. I don't know if you read his story, Ed. He used to live with his cousin in Chicago. And they dated a couple of stewardesses that lived down the hall. And for him to turn whatever they were doing back in the 80s into being a multi-billionaire that is ready to buy the Ottawa Senators is very impressive.
Yes, very impressive. Speaking of impressive,
I mean, he and his cousin, I remember at the time, they were essentially perfect strangers to each other.
Trying to move on. Now, normally I don't pay much attention to the World Championships, and maybe it was because of this kind of Cinderella story that caught a lot of people's attention. No. But I have been following it because of the Locked on LA Kings show that I do. But the World Championships went on. Canada beat Germany for gold. I know your guy, Adam Fantilli, or at least maybe your guy, Adam Fantilli, was a part of the Team Canada win there. The two stories, though, are the USA and Latvia. The USA was 7-0 in the preliminary round. They had not won this event since 1933. And they proceeded to lose.
Wait. Yes. Wait. They haven't won the World Championships since 1933.
That's correct.
I don't believe that's true.
All right. Well, you can look it up if you'd like. But they lost to Germany in overtime. And then they lost to Latvia in overtime and finished in fourth place in the tournament after going undefeated in the preliminary round. And for Latvia, now, this was played in Riga, so they had some serious home ice advantage, but first ever medal in international play for Latvia, which they were doing some celebrating after winning that. You would have thought that that was the gold medal and not the bronze medal, but understandable that the folks there in Latvia are having a good time. And as we've mentioned, it may not be a big deal for us in the U.S., maybe even North America, but sometimes it's not just about us. This is a bigger event overseas. And congrats to Canada and Latvia for winning medals. And I guess Germany did as well. Sorry, they got the silver. But
No, you're right. That 1933 is the only one and only gold medal that the USA has won at the World Championships. That seems shocking to me. But when I watched the Latvia celebration, and I put this on Twitter, it reminds me of what Teemu Selanne said about going to the Olympics. He would rather win the bronze than the silver, because you win to get the bronze, you lose to get the silver. And the difference of emotions of not getting any medal at all and then winning a medal is completely different than we could have won the gold and we had to settle for the silver. You're not shaking the hand of a team that just beat you. You're the victor in that game. And Latvia's celebration on the ice, I loved the guy that scored the goal. I don't know his name, but he did the Patrick Kane celebration from when Patrick Kane won the Stanley Cup, and I liked that. And the other thing was, did you see the reception they got in Latvia?
Yeah, it was. They declared it a national holiday in that country
for winning the bronze in the World Championships.
Yes, I know.
I'm guaranteeing you right now, if the USA had won gold, nobody here would care. Nobody here would be greeting them at the airport beyond their families.
That is 100% accurate.
I'm looking at this. I'm like, is this accurate? Is this something different? And they're just claiming this is the world. And then I look. I'm like, my God. City center, just
how many players on the U.S. team do you think you could name?
Well, I just perused the roster, so more than a minute ago. But before that, maybe two. And when I look at this roster, I'm telling you right now, we're not sending our best.
No, you're not impressed with Rocco Grimaldi, who I think was the leading scorer for the U.S.
How about your guy, Cal Peterson?
Yeah.
He's on the team.
Oh, yeah.
Alex Tuck is I'm impressed with.
Yeah.
There's a few guys here. Mikey Esamont, Nick Perbix. I've never even heard of these people.
I think, isn't
Anders Bjork, I didn't know was an American.
Esamont plays for the Winnipeg Jets.
Right, but impact minutes?
No.
Nick Bonino was the team captain? Whew. This is not a good team. Yeah, when your goaltending options are Casey DeSmith, Drew Commesso, and Cal Peterson, Oh, boy, that's Sophie's Choice.
Jesus.
And not a good one. Now, that's good for Latvia and good for Germany. Honestly, it reminded me that you and I and most Americans don't care in the slightest. Even hockey fans don't care about the World Championships. But other countries care a lot, as proven by the reaction in Latvia. It's big for interest in hockey in Latvia. Germany getting the silver is big for them. And that's good for hockey worldwide because it's more people interested. It's more kids playing and more excitement about the sport worldwide. So that's a good thing.
We are excited to welcome back friend of the show, Doug Plagans, radio play-by-play man for the Florida Panthers, also the host of Panthers Insider, NHL Network correspondent. And you can follow Doug on Twitter. He is at Doug Plagans, Plagens. Hey, Doug, anything going on in South Florida sports these days?
Well, just a little bit going on down here. Thank you very much, Eddie, for having me. But, yeah, exciting times down here in South Florida with the Panthers in the heat. And, of course, last night at the time we're doing this, found out who the Panthers are going to be playing in the upcoming Stanley Cup Finals. So the Panthers had been resting for a little bit, preparing, and now they know that it's going to be the Vegas Golden Knights on the other side. So now we're getting ready to head out to Vegas for Game 1 coming up on Saturday.
Obviously, lots of questions about that and the path that the Panthers have taken to get to the Stanley Cup final. But it is incredible when you consider you've got two teams from the same area in the Heat and the Panthers, both 8 seeds making it to the championship. That is crazy.
Yeah, you look at it, the Panthers, they got their playoff spot locked down in the final days of the regular season, edged out the Pittsburgh Penguins by a point to get that second wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. And then on the other side, the Miami Heat, they had to win a play-in to get into their round one series against the Milwaukee Bucks. And then, of course, they knocked off Milwaukee and then the Knicks. And then, of course, got by the Boston Celtics, a close call there in the Eastern Conference Finals. But they were able to get by them. So now it's on the NBA Finals for the Heat. So, like I said, exciting times down here in South Florida. And you look at what the Panthers were able to do, and it just shows you the belief that this team had. And of course, they got hot at the end of the year, and they went 6-1-1 down the stretch, edged out Pittsburgh. But this was something that was building for a big chunk of the second half of the year, and of course, they were able to make their way into the playoffs. And as you mentioned, Eddie, took on some of the NHL's, not just the Eastern Conference, but the NHL's heavyweights en route to this Stanley Cup final appearance.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And just for a second, though, it is crazy when you think about the what-ifs. And you've seen Pittsburgh not make it. They fire their GM. They fire their director of hockey operations. I mean, if Florida doesn't make it, who knows what the circumstances could be for changes with them, because they did kind of go all in before the season to make changes, to get in the playoffs and have success. It's wild to wonder how that would all works out, but the Panthers get in and now they're on this incredible run, and that's not something you have to worry about.
The Panthers, like, this is what's interesting. You look back at the second portion of the season, not even second half, because it runs deeper than that. From January 1st on, the Panthers in the regular season, I'm talking about, from January 1st to the end of the regular season, the Panthers played 45 games. From January 1st to the end of the regular season, Toronto, who a lot of people considered a cup contender from the outset, in that span, Toronto also played 45 games. In that span, Toronto had 59 points. The Panthers had 56 points. That's a measurable chunk of time. We're not talking about, you know, just a couple of weeks span. We're not talking about a small sample size. We're talking about over half of the regular season. And that's enough time for things to really take shape. And from January 1st on, the Panthers and the Leafs, in terms of the record, in terms of how they were finishing the regular season, they ended up really right there neck and neck with each other. So that's why, yeah, the Panthers got hot at the end, and they were able to turn it into a playoff spot. But this was something that was really building for a big chunk of the year. Paul Maurice has said, you go back to a game on January 1st. The Panthers played the New York Rangers at home. They didn't win the game. But they loved the way they finished that game. And that was really when things got rolling. And then they had some good stretches in the second half of the year and then had a huge stretch. They had the 6-game win streak. They finished 6-1-1 in the regular season. That's how they got into the playoffs. But this was a team that was pushing for a playoff spot for a long time, as we know, and it's benefited them. Now you look back at it, this team was, you know, playing every game, knowing how big every single point was for a couple of months from really the All-Star break on. They were playing with a playoff mindset because they knew that they couldn't leave points on the table, and they were able to get their way into the Stanley Cup playoffs. And now we all see what's happened. So yeah, this is something that was a build. And I think what it also shows you is just how spread out the talent is in the league. And it shows you how much parity there is too. And it shows you, I mean, I love to mention this. There was a point in time, you go back to the 80s, 16 out of 21 teams would get into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Now it's 16 out of 32. So half of the teams aren't getting in. And every year you've probably got a handful of teams that missed the playoffs that are right there on that edge that were capable of winning a round had they gotten into the playoffs. So it's hard to make the playoffs. You can't fake your way in. And once you get there, I think that the gap between the first place team in the regular season and the 16th place team in the regular season really just isn't that sizable. And I think once we got into these playoffs, we've seen how tight everything was. I mean, for example, there wasn't a sweep in the Stanley Cup playoffs until the Panthers swept Carolina. So the talent gap is just so evenly matched across the board. And I think this season and these playoffs have really spoken to that.
We have seen, obviously, some changes for the Panthers from winning the President's Trophy a year ago. And I assume management was like, that was great, but playoff success is what we're really looking for. So you get a new head coach in Paul Maurice. You bring in a guy like Matthew Tkachuk, who's been amazing. Just can you talk about now where you are at this point, what type of influence those two men have had on this team this year?
Well, you could tell from the outset, Paul Maurice was putting his stamp on this team, and the structure they play with, the ability to not just get, you know, and this is a team that can be really successful on the rush offensively, but they can manufacture, and they turned into one of the best forechecking teams in the National Hockey League. They are one of the best neutral zone teams in the National Hockey League. So they were able to take a lot of what made them strong before, that tempo, that speed that we saw from this team previously, but they were able to use it in some other different parts of the game to continue to build on their success and become a really well-rounded team under Paul Maurice. And everything's really just come together here as this season's gone along. And again, he's just done such a great job with this group. And you look at Matthew Tkachuk, and he went, you know, throughout the entire regular season and now in the playoffs, never having a slump of any kind. That's hard to do when you're playing against the best players in the world every night, and you're playing against the best defenders on every team every night, to never have a cold spell. And the thing with Matthew Tkachuk, and we all know what you see on TV, he plays with that intensity and that emotion, so he's a huge leadership-type guy in that regard. He can put the puck in the net. We know what kind of goal-scoring totals he's been able to post, and you see his points. But I think one of the things that maybe has not gotten the credit that it deserves, his hands and his ability to pass. He's an elite passer. He draws a ton of attention out there, and he's able to find teammates again. Like, you know, he's just a great distributor of the puck, the way he's able to use his vision in that way. And the way he uses his hands in front of the net, he, as Paul Maurice has mentioned, he doesn't just deflect pucks. He steers them. He has this ability. There are only a handful of guys. You look at maybe a guy like Joe Pavelski, for example. You know, there's only a handful of guys that can deflect pucks the way that Matthew Tkachuk can in front of the net. And then there's some of the plays that he's able to make in close quarters. And we've seen those with some of the goals that have been scored in this playoff run. But he's doing everything for this team. And again, he's becoming, you know, not just a leader on the ice and a huge point producer, but he's turning into, you know, must-see TV. He's just got such a great personality about him. You know, even casual fans, I think, would, if you're watching a game and you see Matthew Tkachuk, you're gonna say, I'm interested in that guy. I want to watch that guy play, because every time he's on the ice, something's happening. Whether it's, you know, whether he's you know, setting up a teammate, scoring a goal, throwing a hit, getting in the face of the opponent. He just plays a huge role in every part of the game for the team. But yeah, Paul Maurice and Matthew Tkachuk, both in their first seasons with the organization, both have made huge impacts this season.
You talked about how this was building for the Panthers. Was that the case with goalie Sergei Bobrovsky, or has he taken it to another level here in the postseason?
Well, you look at the at Sergei Bobrovsky over the course of the year, and what's interesting is Paul Maurice has pointed to it. There was a game, I believe it was, I think I have the date right. I have the magnet schedule right here, so I actually can tell you the exact date. It was a road game in Winnipeg on the 6th of December. Sergei Bobrovsky actually came out in relief in that game, but Paul Maurice has said when Sergei came out of the tunnel in relief in that game, he just had a different swagger about him when he came onto the ice for that appearance. And then there was a run in the middle of the season, right to, I'd say maybe right around before the All-Star break, leading toward the All-Star break. He started 14 or 15 in a row, played great. Then, of course, late in the season, and this has been well documented, anybody who was following the playoff races, you saw that Sergei Bobrovsky was sidelined with a non-COVID illness in late March. I believe he started on March 27th against Ottawa, didn't get back into a game until game three of the Boston series. So you're talking close to 4 weeks at that point between appearances for him. Alex Lyon was instrumental. He took over the net there down the stretch because he was the option. And he's, credit to Alex Lyon. He is the consummate pro. I can tell you, just being around the guy, unbelievable attitude every single day. Great teammate. No reason. I guess it shows you exactly why his teammates love him. He's just a great teammate. Really smart guy, too. Yale guy, Alex Lyon. But he sees the goal crease late in the year because, he was called up from Charlotte, not a 20-year-old rookie by any means. This is a 30-year-old pro who's seen some NHL time, who won a Calder Cup last year with the Chicago Wolves in the AHL. So he's played big games, albeit on a different stage. But, hey, any time you can win a championship at any level of hockey, that's valuable experience, and that's hard to do. And Alex came in, played great for this team down the stretch. 1-6 straight. He was in net when the Panthers won a game against the Boston Bruins right before the All-Star break. Was really an inspiring come-from-behind overtime win the Panthers had over Boston going into the break. And played the last 8 games of the regular season, started the first 3 games of the playoffs. And there was a game there against Boston, and it wasn't any kind of an indictment on Alex's play, but as Paul Maurice said, that game against the Boston Bruins, game 3, he said if the Panthers were going to come back in that one, it was going to be because the offense was going to do big things. It wasn't because of anything that a goaltender was going to be able to do. So it seemed like it was a good spot to get a feel for Sergei's game and see where he was, because he was going on about 4 weeks since he had played. And since he's gotten back in, he has just been on a different level. He has been all world, and it's been great to see, because I can tell you, first and foremost, he's a great goalie. You see him go about his business. The guy's won 2 Vezina trophies. But when you see him on practice days, when you see him on the non-game days, his level of preparation, his dedication to the craft, his detail-oriented nature, the way he prepares all the time, this is as dedicated an athlete to every part of his game as you're going to find. So you feel really good for him going on a run like this, but it's no surprise that he's been able to dial it up like this, and the whole team's feeding off of it. And he's just been, like I said, he's been otherworldly. And Eddie, I think now I know we're probably going to get to it, but you look ahead at the Stanley Cup final, both of these teams are so evenly matched in so many ways. Both have a lot of star power, both have deep forward groups, both coaches like to play all 4 lines. You've got 2 really experienced coaches who've been to Stanley Cup finals before. You've got groups of defensemen who can move the puck. You got 2 goaltenders here, one who's got 2 Vezina trophies, who's played a ton of playoff games, who's been absolutely on fire. And on the other side, you got a guy that seized the starting job for his team in round 2 because of an injury, but everybody has known this guy's been a talented guy throughout his career who just needed an opportunity. Both been playing well. That could very well be what this series comes down to, is a battle between those guys.
We're talking with Doug Plagans, the Florida Panthers radio play-by-play man. I just want a couple of questions kind of on each of the series to get to this point, because this, it is really a journey to get to this point. But I mean, first round, the Panthers are down 3-1 to the historically great Boston Bruins as far as what they did in the regular season. They come back and win that series I can't even imagine the amount of confidence that must have instilled in Florida to be able to do that, to think we're not probably not going to face something like this the rest of the way, so we can kind of have the confidence to do anything after doing this.
You know, in that series, they learned a lot along the way. There were some valuable lessons that maybe you didn't even realize were lessons as that series went on. But at the same time, they went into that series and they embraced the underdog mentality. But at the same time, I know the regular season's the regular season, and it doesn't really mean a whole lot once game 83 comes around. But you look at the way that the Panthers played the Bruins during the regular season. There were only two teams in the league that beat the Bruins twice in the regular season, the Panthers and the Ottawa Senators. Moral of the story, I guess you needed a Tkachuk on your team to beat Boston twice during the regular season. But at the same time, the Panthers played the Bruins very well during the regular season. So I think if you were the Boston Bruins and you drew the Panthers in round one, there's no way you were going to look at that like this was, you know, that's your reward for having a historic regular season here. You get to play these guys who've been absolutely on a roll to finish the year, a lot of which were a part of a President's Trophy the year before, a lot of guys with playoff experience and high-end talent, and a goalie who's won two Vezina trophies that is going to find his way into the series by the midway point. So the Panthers went into that embracing the underdog role, but knowing what they were capable of, and they came out in game one against Boston, and they were able to establish that forecheck. And even though the Panthers didn't win game one in Boston, you felt like at that point they kind of put the Bruins on notice a little bit, because you could tell that the Panthers' forecheck got the Bruins out of their comfort zone. And then game two came around, and the Panthers got that forecheck going again. But the difference in game two, Sam Bennett was back from injury, and that took things to a whole different level. And defensemen, I think after you go behind the net a handful of times and you're greeted by number nine, I think I would imagine that gets to be a little tiresome after a while. And Sam Bennett really helped turn things in the Panthers' favor. They won that game two in Boston. And I think as soon as they won game two, there was a whole different level of confidence. And I think at that point, the Bruins realized, okay, this is going to be difficult. Game three and four in Florida, the Panthers actually lost both of those. And Boston was, Paul Maurice has said, they were as dominant as they could be in game number four of that first round series. But the Panthers won in overtime in Boston in game five. They won a wild game six in the first round, 7-5. Game seven, you know, the old story, all bets are off, but you got to that game seven and you could sense the Panthers were comfortable. And Paul Maurice, I talked to Paul Maurice the day of game seven in Boston. We talked to him in the media availability. And he said that, you know, this is where you need to enjoy yourself. Everybody's coming in enjoying themselves because everybody's focused. Everybody knows the task at hand. But if you're not enjoying yourself, you're not going to be able to maximize what you can do out there. And I talked to Eric Staal that morning as well, who in his career is perfect in game sevens. And he said a very similar thing, that this is what it's all about. And you know, this is, you just have to come in and you keep yourself focused, but you also have to enjoy being in these big moments. And throughout these playoffs, I think a lot of it stemmed from there. The Panthers, of course, got the game winner from Carter Verhaeghe in game seven, forced it into overtime. Brandon Montour scored with about a minute left to force that game into overtime. You know, there were so many little plays along the way in that series and big plays along the way in that series that shaped things. But when the two teams came out for game seven overtime, the Panthers looked comfortable and confident, and the Boston Bruins looked tense, and the building reflected that. That was as tense an 18,000-person environment as I've ever witnessed, and when Carter Verhaeghe scored that overtime winner, it was as quiet as I've ever heard 18,000 people. So that first-round series featured a little bit of everything, but the Panthers embraced that underdog role. You know, the other thing, Eddie, that I think maybe – I know a lot of people in our market here talk about it, but something that maybe gets forgotten. In the final seconds of game five in the first round, Brad Marchand had a clear breakaway on Sergei Bobrovsky. And Sergei Bobrovsky made a brilliant save that pushed the game into overtime. If Brad Marchand scores there, we're not having this conversation right now. So, again, it shows you just how razor thin the margins are and how many big plays were made throughout that series. And that was what it was going to take. Ultimately, the Panthers came out on top.
Second round series, the Toronto Maple Leafs popping champagne. They don't have to face Tampa Bay. They don't have to face Boston. And there were a chance of we want Florida. Well, that didn't really work out, did it?
it did not. And, you know, that series, that was the same kind of thing. And Matthew Tkachuk said before that series, he said, all right, our reward for beating the best team is now we get to go play the second best team. And there were a lot of pundits out there and a lot of odds makers and people like that who were saying that the Toronto Maple Leafs were the favorite to win it all at that point. A lot of people were talking about the potential of a Toronto-Edmonton final at that point in time. Well, Sergei Bobrovsky was unbelievable in that series against Toronto, held them to 2 goals in each game, and the Panthers were able to get the overtime winner in game 5. They got out to that 3-0 lead to start the series, and there were stretches. They had to come from behind win in game number 2 of that series in Toronto, but the Panthers got that one done in overtime as well. And I think there were a lot of lessons taken from the Boston series and how, you know, the Panthers got really comfortable playing in tough road environments in those first 2 rounds, going from Boston, going into Toronto. But in that series, Sergei Bobrovsky was brilliant. And the other thing in that series, and I don't have them offhand, but I know there are a lot of, if you're a fan of underlying defensive numbers, what Alexander Barkov was able to do defensively against Toronto in round 2 was unheard of. And if you look at the surface numbers, Matthews didn't score. Tavares didn't score. Nylander was pretty active. He had a couple of goals. I think Marner had one. But the Panthers did a really good job against Toronto's big guns. Alexander Barkov was a big reason for that. And there are a lot of underlying, I think I have it on one of my old prep sheets here from that last series. But Barkov in round 2, I believe I got this from NHL Network, he led all skaters in round 2. So the series against Toronto, anybody in a second round in the league, total block passes, D-zone block passes, D-zone loose puck recoveries, D-zone puck battle wins, and stick checks. So Alexander Barkov was a force defensively in that second round series. That was a big difference maker that maybe doesn't show up on the surface level box scores.
Conference finals, they beat the Carolina Hurricanes, and I have to ask you, what is it like to call a 4 overtime game?
It was, so the thing with that one, game 1 of the Eastern Conference final, and you could tell goal scoring was going to be at a premium there, and there were, well, first, to put in perspective, there was a breakaway save that Sergei Bobrovsky made on Martin Natchez in the 3rd period, which was a big reason why that game went to overtime. But that was one of the big highlights of that series, was that save, I thought, especially given the time that it happened in the back half of the 3rd period. But that game won. As it went along, there are a couple things you noticed in that one. First of all, I thought for a marathon overtime game, and I can tell you, it was the longest game I've ever called. It was the longest game in Panthers history. The previous long was game 4 of the 96 Cup Final, which ended at 4:31 of triple overtime. This one went until about 12 seconds left in the fourth overtime. So we were coming up on a fifth overtime. I think it was the longest game in Panthers history. Like I said, longest game I'd ever called personally. But as that game went on, I thought, in comparison to other double and triple overtime games that we've seen over the years, I thought there was a lot more tempo in those overtime periods than maybe we're used to in some of the other ones that we've seen. Both goaltenders were really challenged in those overtimes. And I can tell you, it just speaks to the caliber of the athletes on both sides to compete in a game like that. And what it came down to at the end, you know, maybe the Carolina Hurricanes thought that they were just going to run the clock out. Maybe they thought they were getting closer to to another intermission, and the Panthers were able to squeeze one more scoring chance out of it. And it was Sam Bennett and Matt Tkachuk right in the middle of it, of course. And Matt Tkachuk got the game winner and ended the marathon there. From my perspective, just calling the game, I can tell you when I'm there doing the game, I'm thinking in my head, as long as the Panthers get the win here, I don't care if this thing goes to 25 overtimes. We're in this thing to win it, and it never, you know, fatigue never crossed my mind. The only non-hockey thought that crossed my mind was in the intermission before the fourth overtime. It dawned on me that I hadn't eaten a meal in a really long time. The press room meal was like 10 hours ago at that point. So I was getting a little bit hungry, but I was able to battle through that. And then, of course, the Panthers got the win in the final seconds of the fourth overtime. But it's one of the true unique things. And I know that because the Panthers came out on the good end of it, it's probably easier for me to talk about the positive sides of it. But, you know, with that game, it's one of the really unique things that our sport has. The fact that you don't know, obviously you don't know that a game's going to go to quadruple overtime, but you always know in the playoffs that the possibility of that exists. And as it's going on, people just enjoy it for what it is, because once you get past double overtime, it starts to get into the historical realm. And by the time that game ended, there had only been five games in NHL history that had taken longer, and two of those were back in the 1930s. So what we saw there in game one was something we don't see every day, and there's no doubt that that win set the tone and really played a factor in the rest of the series. The Panthers obviously were able to get some momentum off that, and they were all close games, but the Panthers were able to get that conference final sweep. And Matthew Tkachuk was brilliant. Sergei Bobrovsky was brilliant. We saw again how tight the games can be this time of the year, but the Panthers – If anybody took anything away from those conference finals, I think you'd see that this is a team that's gotten really battle-tested over the course of these last 6 weeks or so, and it's a team that's really comfortable in situations where maybe a lot of other teams would be uncomfortable. But the Panthers are able to find comfort and be confident when the chips are down, and, you know, in those tough spots and games and tight games and one-goal games, they're able to play some of their best hockey.
All right, so getting to the Stanley Cup final, I'll ask the cliched question, rest versus rust. Panthers have had 9 days off before they'll play in game one of the final. Is that a concern at all, and are there any injury issues that the Panthers may benefit with this layoff?
I think the rest is going to only benefit, and Paul Maurice has been asked about this a lot. Obviously, we were over there, we've been over there every single day, hearing from Paul Maurice, hearing from the players, talking to the players, things like that, and Paul Maurice has said that this time of the year, he'll always take the rest. The rest will, you know, you don't usually get an opportunity to rest up like this. So he said that this time of the year, always take the rest. And he said this morning, you know, he expects to have two teams that are going in there with their main lineups good to go, because everybody's going to have, even on the Vegas side, they're going to have a handful of days to prepare for this. So you're going to see some good hockey. You're going to see some of the best of the best here. And, you know, in talking to the guys, you talked to Sam Bennett yesterday, and, you know, even mentioned it's unusual to have, a layoff like this, to have this kind of a gap in the schedule, but it's an opportunity for everybody to just stay prepared, stay fresh, and make sure they're ready to go for round one. We've talked to a lot of the guys, and every single one of them has said the same thing. They are so prepared. They are so focused that, and I asked Radko Gudas yesterday too, you know, you always hear the importance of staying in the moment, and, you know, that's, and how important that is when you're playing every night and you're in the battle every night. And I asked him, is it important to stay in the moment when you're not playing every night, when you've got this layoff? And he said it's exactly the same thing. You just want to keep yourself in the moment, keep yourself prepared. You know, even though they didn't know who the opponent was, they've known that the series is going to start on Saturday. So everybody's got their program, everybody's got their system of preparation, and everybody's going to be ready to go come game one.
All right, let's get your final thoughts on the matchup. You've got Florida riding an 8-game road winning streak. They're starting the first two games on the road. And even though Vegas is the number one seed out of the West, they didn't have more points than any of the teams the Panthers have beaten so far, Boston, Toronto, or Carolina. Just your thoughts on the matchup in general.
Yeah, it was a historic road the Panthers took to get there, beating three, 50-win teams to get to the Stanley Cup final. And I asked Paul Maurice about, you know, in a related item this morning, with Panthers being wild card two going in, we all have seen what the fortress looks like for big games in the playoffs. We know it's going to be loud. FLA Live Arena here has been loud, but the Panthers, they've been in some tough road environments here in the playoffs. Boston was loud in round one, Toronto in round two. The Caniacs, obviously, were loud in round three. And I asked Paul Maurice, you know, for a lot of teams, something like this, going on the road, game one, Stanley Cup final, into Vegas, that could be daunting for a lot of teams. But for this Panthers group, was the experience they've gotten so far in these playoffs valuable? And he said, absolutely. This is, you know, they've played in Boston. They've played in Toronto. They've played in Carolina. They've been on the road to start big series in these tough road environments. So there's no doubt they've gotten some good experience, you know, in this area as they approach the playoffs. So, you know, I haven't seen how a lot of people are necessarily, you know, what the experts are saying, quote unquote, about the matchup and things like that. But I can tell you right now, this Panthers team throughout the playoffs, they haven't backed down from a challenge. They know that's going to be a tough test over on the other side. But you look at what the at the body of work these two teams have put together in the playoffs, there's no question that right here for this Stanley Cup final, these are the two teams playing the best rolling into this Cup final. And I think for all the reasons I listed right off the top, this is going to be a really entertaining, really good series. And for people watching, listening across the country, you've got star power. You've got, you know, depth. You've got great stories as far as the goaltenders are concerned. Both teams are extremely well coached. You know, there's a lot to like about this matchup, and it's going to be really exciting. And then there's also the fact that, Eddie, going into the conference final round, Vegas was the northernmost market left in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So it just shows you how much the game has expanded over the decades and you know, how much the talent is spread out and everything like that. This is going to be an exciting series for a number of reasons. And again, I hope everybody enjoys it out there. But there's no shortage of storylines, subplots, and I know as the Panthers get ready to go on the road to start another series. It's not a challenge that that they'll back down from, because this is what they've been handling throughout the playoffs. So they've been able to get some good experience over the last couple of months.
That is Doug Plagans. He is the radio play-by-play man for the Florida Panthers, also the host of Panthers Insider, NHL Network correspondent. Follow him on Twitter. He is at Doug Plagans, Plagens. Doug, it's always a pleasure. Great stuff. Enjoy your time calling the Stanley Cup Final. And if it ends up that Lord Stanley's Cup heads down to South Florida, maybe we can talk to you again, and you can fill us in on how that's going.
Anytime, Eddie. Just let me know. Happy to jump on anytime. Thanks so much for having me, as always.
Time of the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast, and we are going to get into your emails in just a moment. Always want to give a shout-out to our friend Dave over at Tally Hockey Jerseys, tallycustomhockeyjerseys.com, to get your Puck Podcast merchandise, your jerseys, your hats, things of that nature. Also want to thank all of our fine supporters over on Patreon, patreon.com/puckpodcast. Really, really appreciate all you guys who have gone the extra mile to support us by making a generous donation each and every month. We greatly appreciate it. Let's get to the emails. Not many this week, but Doug, go ahead and lead us off.
Our first email comes from James in the UK, and he wants to talk about Jamie Benn, who was suspended last we left him. And he wrote in right after that. He said, "Hey guys, hope you guys are both good. Just wanted to say I enjoyed your last episode, but I completely disagree with Doug that Jamie Benn should have only gotten a one-game suspension. I would have given him 3 for his excuse alone. Got to be the worst explanation I have ever heard. About as believable as me suffering or suggesting I fell on my laptop and accidentally typed this email. Dear, oh dear. Keep up the good work, James in the UK." Eddie liked that one.
I did. That was a good one.
There was a whole comedy bit that... My favorite comedian of all time, Bill Hicks, had about, I was walking through the streets of London with my hands in my pockets, and I got knocked by a person that was going the other way. I got bumped into by them, and it knocked me into the door of the shop I was passing, which happened to be a pornography shop. And in my shame, I pulled my hands out of my pockets quickly to cover my face. And money flew out of my pocket, landed on the counter. The man put something in my hand. I ran out of there as quickly as I could, went back to my hotel room, and it turned out to be pornography. So that's about the as believable as Jamie Benn. I was falling. And he also had the bit about the Rodney King trial and how the police claimed it's all in how you view the tape. And they said, how do you view this tape that it doesn't make you look guilty? Well, if you play it backwards, you see us help Mr. King up and send him on his way. very funny.
Our next email comes from Pat. He is in Hobart, Tasmania. And he says, hello, gents, and the whole of the Puck Podcast community. What a wild ride the playoffs have been so far. Upsets right and center. Unlikely heroes, unbelievable skill, just a reminder that hockey is the greatest sport on earth. In amongst all of this, it's good to know that some things never change. I'm talking, of course, about the permanent resident of Bum Island, the human garbage Neanderthal, Jamie Benn. What an absolute disgraceful act we saw in Game 3. I'd say it's the dirtiest thing I've seen in the NHL since, let me think now, since he cross-checked Dylan Larkin in the back of the neck, ending Larkin's season. Larkin spent a couple of days in the hospital, could barely walk when he was released, and needed a chauffeur for several weeks. Had to wear a neck brace for 8 weeks. No call on the play, no supplemental discipline. I got to be honest, I don't remember that. My goodness. Yeah. He says, I guess the last sentence is part of the issue. Why would he change his behavior? He's a dirty, dirty player, but, wait for it, has never been suspended. Ask Avs fans about him targeting Eric Johnson's injured leg in the playoffs a few years ago. The Department of Player Safety is a joke. I feel bad for the majority of Stars fans, who I'm sure are reasonable people, that this place or that this piece of dung is the captain of their hockey team. I actually like a lot of players, but I can't wish them success while Ben is a part of their organization. When there are other players who routinely do questionable stuff, there's usually an element of the hockey got it wrong as part of the discussion. Are Trouba's dirty hits or just borderline? How about Ryan Reeves? Depends on who you talk to. The Petrangelo chop was outrageous, and I'm not defending it, but the worst possible injury from that is a broken arm. No question that the play has no place in hockey, but compared to the potentially life-altering consequences of putting your stick to hit someone in the neck, he's done it more than once. I'm writing this on the eve of Game 5, and I hope the Stars win so that Ben can return to the ice when they get eliminated. Thanks for all the years of entertainment from the podcast. All the best, Pat in Hobart, Tasmania. And the PS came in. Follow-up email to that. Delicious.
Yeah. No, he's 100% right.
He got his wish.
It's tough when they continually overlook stuff. We've talked about this in the past. And then say, but he has no history of past discipline. Because you've let him off the hook numerous times. That's why. It's not that he's never done anything dirty. It's that, come on. And that's a shame. I will say, friend of the show and friend of mine, James Curry, was at Game 6. And he sent me a brief video from outside the arena, the Dallas Stars arena there. And every trash can in the area looked like it was toxic. Because it was literally glowing green from all the glow sticks that they handed out to the fans and the people had thrown away. So every trash can looked like it was storing nuclear waste or kryptonite.
It's like the Springfield nuclear power.
Yes, place. Exactly. Every trash can was just glowing, and it was a funny image. But yeah, Jamie Benn deserved to be in that trash can as well. And I don't know what you do as an organization, but I would seriously consider removing his captaincy going into next season, because you have Joe Pavelski sitting right there. And that's a guy that is a better leader to me than a guy that puts his team shorthanded for 5 minutes, gets suspended for 2 games in the conference final. That's maybe not your leader going forward. My next email and my last email comes from our friend Dave Taylor, who says, evening, it is now Monday night and the finals are set. It seemed Vegas was going to sweep, but credit Dallas for not giving up and making the series a fight. Well, that all ended when Vegas dominated and closed out the series with a decisive 6-0 win. Now on to my rant. The finals are now due to set to start on June 3rd. Seriously, NHL, way to kill momentum, both with the teams and viewers, on making us wait 5 days. and the Panthers will have been waiting 9 days. Just ridiculous. Dave Taylor. And yeah, this is not a... I'm curious why they did this. I'm sure it's because they want the first game to be on a weekend. But it's not like either team has arena problems, right? They are not sharing with a NBA team.
That is correct.
Miami Heat and Florida Panthers are both in the final, but they don't share an arena.
Correct.
So it's not a scheduling issue that I know of. And that's unfortunate they have to wait this so long to get the finals started. But the entire finals will be played in the month of June. And if they end, if it goes seven, I think it doesn't end until like June 19th, which is just a week or so before the draft. So I'm hoping it goes seven so that there really minimizes the off season here. We go straight from the games to the draft to free agency. And then we're only a month or two away from training camps beginning.
Yeah, I was talking on last week's show when it looked like the NBA Eastern Conference Finals was going to be a sweep. That, oh, the NHL is going to get first crack at this. Nope. It goes seven games, and now the finals are actually starting before in the NBA, before the Stanley Cup Finals. So much for that. Our final email comes from Hart. He is in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. He says, gentlemen, a listener was regaling the virtues of Ottawa. I have traveled there many times, but never as a destination vacation. If you're checking out our fine country, may I gently suggest you start with British Columbia and if coming east, maybe the old Quebec and perhaps Newfoundland. Notice I skipped Ottawa. I'm sorry, Ottawans, but that is the blandest city I have ever been to. Be a Bayward market aside, home to endless government offices. The streets are sanitized and the zombies are everywhere. They are easily the worst hockey fans in the country, as evidenced by the thousands of available tickets to go to playoff games when the Senators made it a couple rounds in. I appreciate that the rink wasn't downtown, but inconvenient location would not keep passionate hockey fans away from second-round playoff games. Now that I'm done tactlessly lighting up Ottawa like a Christmas tree, it's time to turn my vitriol to my own wife team. After a long marriage to the Jets, Paul Maurice snapped. He decided he just couldn't win with this crew. Some sided with the players, and some of us remained sold on Paul Mo. Since the split, the Jets have hooked up with a couple others. The most recent established a scorched earth policy during the season, ending post-game presser, practically flipping the podium and doing everything he could to not use the word soft, which was implied repeatedly. Meanwhile, Maurice is alive and well in Miami. To quote the great Jim Morrison, I don't have to tell you guys that his players have responded to him and are waiting for their opponent in the Stanley Cup Finals. Maurice is a well-read, philosophical man who loves the game and reflects hard on his practice. I am happy that he has vindicated himself. And seeing as we are holding people accountable this week, I'm going to eat a buffet-sized helping of crow. I made a few predictions this year on the Puck Podcast, and I'm still waiting for the first one to come in fruition, like this country waiting on its first Stanley Cup in three decades. Warm regards, Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia.
And back to the Michelle Therrien rant, Ed, do you remember when that was?
Oh, I don't. I don't, but... Yeah,
I don't think we were doing the podcast at the time.
Oh, I thought we were. Where he said that they were soft, that the Penguins were soft.
He
didn't have the T on the end. He called them soft, but you know.
Yeah. I really think our team is trying to be the softest team in the NHL. And he just lit him up. And if we were doing it, go back and listen to that show. I'm sure we had some fun with it. But it's a great quote and one you don't see much anymore. But I think the Boston Bruins have got to be wondering what they did as well, right? They got rid of Bruce Cassidy year one with the Vegas Golden Knights. He's in the Stanley Cup final. So when you fire a head coach and side with the players, you got to hold the players accountable the next year. Look, I got rid of the head coach. You said you didn't like him. He was the problem. He had a great regular season. We lost in the first round. That's not on the coach anymore. That's on you. And, we'll see. But good for Paul Maurice and Bruce Cassidy to land on their feet. Bruce was fired. Paul Maurice just left. He checked himself out.
He saw the writing on the wall and said...
Yeah, and he was right. And it's worked. It's worked well. So we did question the move at the time for the Panthers, but it is no questioning it now. They made the right move to get rid of Andrew Brunette and bring in Paul Maurice. Everything they've done has worked. They're in the Eastern Conference final, or the Stanley Cup final, for the first time in almost 30 years. So good for them.
Hey, thanks to Doug Plagans for being our special guest on this week's show. Thank you to everyone who took the time to email this week. If you'd like to send us an email for next week's show, it is feedback@puckpodcast.com. Hoping for a competitive, compelling Stanley Cup final. We'll talk about the first two games on next week's show. Doug, anything to add as we close out this week's show?
No, sir. Same as you, hoping for a competitive, drama-free series with no injuries, no controversy. I guess drama-free is not the right word. I want drama, but I want it to be from the play on the ice, not the officiating or Department of Player Safety or any of that nonsense.
All right. And with that, we say thank you for listening. For my partner, Doug Stolhan, I'm Eddie Garcia. We'll talk to you next week with another edition of the Puck Podcast.